Hello and welcome to the Private Practice Made Perfect podcast. I'm Kathy Love. I started life as an OT, had an amazing, crazy private practice which I sold. And what I do now is help allied health business owners create a business that serves them, the time, the money, the joy that they absolutely deserve. And this is where my idea for the podcast started. What I want to do is to capture how hard allied health business owners in Australia work to achieve their dreams, to support their teams, to create amazing outcomes for their clients. So sit back, beverage of choice, drive safely, walk carefully, however you're listening in, and I hope you absolutely enjoy. Hello. Our guest today on the podcast is very, very close to home, so close to home that Ben Reich is one of the NACA Consulting team members. Welcome, Ben.
G'day. How's it going?
Good. Good, good, good. This is nice to be able to chat like this. It's a little bit different to what we usually get done.
Yeah, a little bit less structured. Like it. No complaints.
No complaints. Good. I love an employee that's got no complaints, at least about this bit. The reason I wanted to bring you in for some shared conversation is that you've only started with us very recently, but your undergraduate background is really, really interesting. And for that reason, we've put you out into a really specific project that is really close to all of our hearts. And I think it'd be good to share some of that. Let's start with your role in at NACA Consulting. You came in as a sort of a process project document officer. Tell us a little bit about what that involves, because it kind of sets the scene.
So, yeah, started in, I think it was April, wasn't it? This is about four months ago now. Uh-huh. I think so. I don't know. Memory slipped. But my role in the business is to document all the internal processes and, I guess, systems that make NACA run. I guess the theory behind this is to improve efficiency, as every employee will be able to do any particular task if required, because they'll be able just to read the document which says this is how you do so and so, without having to go backwards and forwards with one another and having to train everybody. Yeah. And yeah. I guess it saves that time.
Yeah, and it's sort of meant that we have the systems there so that different humans can jump in and do different parts of the roles that have to get done. So if our podcast person is away, that someone can get in and follow the bouncing ball and produce a podcast episode as a good example. And, you know, we've sort of changed providers. We've changed the humans who do the podcast, and that was a great learning for us because we realized some of our systems still had a few gaps in them. So we've been able to also review systems under your watchful eye and patch them up and improve them so that it's easier and easier for humans to step in and take over a role if they need to. So you've had an onboarding that with all things Systemology and System Hub. I've never actually asked you this, but what have you thought through all of that System Hub process?
It's a completely new way of writing things that I never would have thought of before. It's like you go in high school and there's one way of like structuring essays and how to do extended responses, and then you go to uni and then you get introduced to academia and having to reference a whole bunch of different authors in your whatever essays and papers that you write. None of that teaches you how to write a system in a business. None of it. So
it's
coming towards
a good thing, actually.
I suppose would have made it a little bit less. I was just a bit of a jump, really. First coming into here and having to write these systems, I sort of had a bit of a clue what I was doing before I started and during the onboarding process. But no, it's been a really insightful and fantastic learning experience to be able to understand how to really analytically write something in such a way that anyone can be able to understand it, no matter what their background is. So
yeah, Yeah. And when we were recruiting, we asked applicants to write a peanut butter and jam sandwich. And your process was the winning one. And I think right from the start, we said that you would learn a whole lot of skills that were going to be differently useful, both for us, but also in your future careers as well. So it sounds as though we're living up to that.
And what's funny about that peanut butter and jelly sandwich, pardon me, is that I'm allergic to nuts. So I previously had no clue on how to write, how to even just make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It's something I've never done. So,
and we laughed about that later because we didn't know. We laughed about that later, and maybe that was why, you know, what we saw from that exercise was the humor and the attention to detail and the logical thinking and, you know, the really clear flow of how to do it. So as you know, we're big fans of systemology. And when I first read that book a couple of years ago, and we've had Dave Jennings, the CEO, in as a podcast guest a couple of months ago, I was just mind blown that someone had figured out a system for writing systems. And this sounds like the most driest book in the history of the world, but it is literally a page turner for someone with a mechanical brain who knows the value of systems. Oh my gosh, I'll just keep reading. It just got better and better and better. And so for those listening, System Hub will reference that in the show notes. But part of what systemology offers is a hub to keep all of your systems. And that's the work that Ben does. All of the writing and documentation that Ben does ends up in Systems Hub. Essentially our library, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. So knowing what you know about systems, why do you think they're so important?
That's a good question, actually. Keeps order, keeps structure, and makes sure that everyone's in the loop, because at the end of the day, knowledge is money. So as long as everyone knows what to do and don't really have the concern about if an employee leaves, well, you're not really losing all that knowledge with they leave. You still got fundamentally what the systems are in place.
Yeah. And when people are in the team, it's helping ensure quality and consistency as well, that there's not too much rogue stuff going on. Mind you, we get a fair bit of that from time to time as well, which is all part of it. All good fun. Now, and so people are probably wondering, my gosh, where on earth do you recruit a process documentation officer from? And so when we read your resume, we were intrigued by your undergraduate degree. So, and what you're just in the process of finishing right now. Tell us a bit about what you're studying.
So I study atmospheric science at Monash University, which is just a glorified way of saying meteorology. I started back in 2019, and through the last couple of years with COVID and the difficulties that's brought up, ended up extending my degree by a year. So I'll be finishing at the end of this year. Atmospheric science is just focused about how the weather works fundamentally, and all the processes, funnily enough.
Not funnily enough, totally, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. All the processes of just can be on the scale of like how a raindrop forms, to how, you know, large scale thunderstorms roll over on a hot summer's day when a cold front comes over. I've always been fascinated by the weather. Ever since I was a little kid, me and Dad would go outside and do rain dances when a storm would come over to try and egg it on, and run inside after getting absolutely saturated when it just poured down.
Your dancing worked.
Yeah. Midas touch. And I used to watch shows about going storm chasing, which is something that I want to do badly in America sometime in the near future. I didn't even realize before I went to uni that you could even study that at uni as part of a science degree. And I saw it popped up when I was looking through the list of majors, and I'm like, you know what? I think that's the degree for me. And it's proven to be one of the best experiences of my life, really.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely wonderful. And when we first met in something resembling an interview, there may have been coffee and bagels involved from memory, it wasn't long before you were showing me maps of Australia, about Australia's climate now and then Australia's climate in 20 or 30 years or something.
Yeah,
really,
yeah, something like that, yeah.
And so we were talking about climate and climate change pretty quickly. Do you remember that bit?
Yeah, I do. I still remember the image. It's on my phone. It's one of my. It's a really good image to show to people. Of just showing how significant the changes in the climate will be if we keep on going on the same track as we are at the moment. So,
yeah. So with this in the back of my mind, a couple of months ago on Earth Day, we hatched this plan and we pitched it to Ben, who replied with the speed of lightning that, yes, I will do this. And this project was about how Naked Consulting can shift towards becoming carbon neutral. You reckon this is a good idea, Ben?
Fantastic idea. Everyone should be doing it. It's the most important issue that we as a species face. And everyone needs to be on deck to tackle it. No matter how small their contribution might be, something is better than nothing. And when I heard that this was a project that was in the works at Naked, I was like, yep, I definitely have to get my hands on that.
Yep. Kick it to me. So we sort of floated it with the team, but it was just pretty instant communication. Yes, count me in. And the whole team came on board very, very quickly. And I guess when we are talking about team, we have employees and we have contractors and they're in Australia and they're offshore and so on and so forth. So we manage a remote team of humans of all shapes and sizes and varieties, which is absolutely amazing. So maybe take us right back to the start, Ben. Where did you kind of start to get this project into shape?
Oh, what was the first thing I did? I think I went, oh, my God, I'm actually doing something like this for once. And then...
You're welcome.
Thank you. Then I think it was the first thing was just to do a bit of research on the internet on how similar businesses have structured a project like this in the past. Mm. A lot of the university content that I've done is focused on the theory behind climate change and how it happens and all the and those sort of processes, not necessarily how to mitigate it in a business, especially a business that's remote. So the internet is a fantastic resource for anything to do with how to shift your business towards carbon neutrality. The government also has some really interesting resources on what the the main steps on how to shift to become carbon neutral were. And they had the nice diagrams and flowcharts on what that process is. And the first thing to do is to audit your emissions and to understand, to get a grasp on what you're tackling with. Because it's pretty difficult to implement a policy on how you need to reduce your emissions by this much in this area if you don't know what your baseline emissions are. So I asked the team using the carbon calculator, which is a resource I've got to thank Kathy for, introducing me to the carbon neutral website because it's something I actually hadn't seen before.
Well, I've got to thank Jason and the Clinico team. Because I'd been speaking with Jason about their adventure to progress to carbon neutral just a week or two before we kind of bought it in-house. I've been thinking about this for a couple of years, but, yeah, the conversation with Jason was just great. So he was the one that linked us into carbonneutral.com.au.
Which is, again, fantastic resource. And it has a carbon calculator on it where you punch in all of your day-to-day activities in a whole bunch of different fields. So how much electricity you use, how much gas you use, how much water, how much you drive, if you use public transport and whatnot. And that accumulates it all into a nice table and breaks it down and gives you your total, a rough estimate of what your total emissions are for the year.
So on the calculator, I struggled to fill it in because there were just things that I just didn't know and there were options that weren't there for what we have in place. Did you just power through that and just you totally?
I found it challenging as well because.
Oh, good.
Yeah, because Naked is remote, it changes, I guess, the scope of how these emissions are calculated. Because instead of you calculate what the emissions are for the central business, for example, like the office or the other factory,
bricks and mortar,
something
stuff.
Like that. Exactly. That makes it a hell of a lot easier to be able to calculate something like this. When you're remote, you're really focusing on what's, I think, considered scope 3 emissions. So that's outside of the business's hands, which is every employee. Because every employee lives in their own place. They have different sources of energy. They eat different amounts of food. Some might go into an office to work for a day. Other people are just going to stay at home. So, therefore, they've got no commuting. All these factors come into play, which actually make it quite challenging to be able to individually audit someone's emissions. And that's, therefore, a bit of a rough – it's more of a rough guess than a perfect pinpoint sort of –
But we set some rules around. We sort of set some guardrails around it. I don't know about rules, but guardrails around it in terms of it's during your workday and based on a typical day and so on and so forth. So if we continue to apply those same guardrails and keep the parameters of measurement as consistent as possible, we should be able to measure difference.
Oh, 100%, 100%. Yeah. And you can gauge some rough estimates on what a regular day's use of electricity or gas would be. And then you just calculate that based on the amount of hours you work or the amount of days you work per week.
I'm sitting here feeling guilty because I've got every single light in the universe on in my room today. And I know we've spoken about this.
That's nothing wrong with that as long as they're energy-saving LEDs.
I'll look into this, Ben. I'll report back. I'll report back. So we did the audit, and we also we spoke quite a bit about this in our team meetings as well.
Yep.
To get those definitions and to get out the calculators and,
And, I completely understand why people found it challenging because it is. It's one of those things that it's something that you really probably never considered before is what's my actual footprint doing these activities? Like even just buying a pair of shoes, for instance, like you wouldn't think necessarily the amount of emissions that it released to be able to make those pair of shoes. So tracking your footprint, it's hard. And then you sort of, like I even realized when I was doing the audit, I thought to myself, my word, like that is a lot higher than I would have thought it was ever been. But that's because where I was living before, I was having to drive like 2 hours a day if I wanted to go to uni. So the irony of me studying an atmospheric science degree, but then polluting the environment by having to drive 150 kilometers a day, it's not lost on me. But
we'll move on with acknowledgement.
Yeah, but no, it's just realizing that what you do has an impact, no matter how small or how big it is. But I think it's also then realizing that there's a degree of inevitability that you are going to be releasing some emissions no matter what, and that actually comes back into play, which I think we'll discuss a bit later on.
So where did you take the team from there once we'd done the audit bit?
So once we'd done the audit, I asked the team to have a look online for different suppliers that we may not use who are also carbon neutral or attempting on the path to becoming carbon neutral. So this can be stuff like, for instance, using different paper or a different energy supplier or even anything like that, or even like an event venue if they use renewable energy or not. As well as in the process of contacting other people who we might partner with to see what their goals are with regards to their carbon neutral strategy.
This is important for a few different reasons. What are your thoughts on us as an organization sharing where we're going with our partners?
I think it's important because it's a journey that everyone has to go through together. And it's important to let everyone know, we're going on this journey. Are you going to come along with us? Instead of it being a free-for-all where everyone's competing. In a sense, competition is good because it will push each other to achieve their goals faster. But at the same time, I believe a more holistic approach needs to be taken, one where we're all coming together and putting our heads together to figure out how we're going to tackle this issue as a species rather than, we need to improve the bottom line or something like that. Obviously, those factors come into play. But the humanitarian aspect is far beyond any small competitive advantage. Because the way I look at it as is that a competitive advantage is not going to be useful if we're all dead. So,
that's putting it right there, Ben.
Yeah.
Absolutely. The other, and so there is this collective now, this collective energy, this collective action. I'm also really curious about the extent to which our various suppliers and partners are thinking about this. And if they're not yet thinking about it, and they kind of get the sense that, well, gosh, Naker Consulting are going carbon neutral and so is this organisation, so is that. Maybe we should be looking at this sooner rather than later. Or maybe we should be looking at this because, oh, my gosh, we never have considered it. And so it's not that we're setting out to shame or rate or judge or anything like that. It's about, well, we're doing this. What are you doing? And, you know, together can we achieve even more? Keeping the planet as healthy as possible.
Gather around, dear listeners, for a moment of sheer audio delight. You may have heard, but we love to chat with allied health business owners. We get inspired hearing about your aspirations, the challenges you face, the roadblocks that get in your way, and business realities. So we invite you to book a free power call with a Naker Consulting business specialist, regardless of where you're at in business. Maybe you're feeling overwhelmed or overworked or overjoyed. We're here for you and we'll meet you exactly where you are, judgment-free. It's okay to book a second or even a third call. We're always keen to hear all your news. Book a free power call with us today at naker.com.au/free-power-call. Let's get the convo ball rolling. Now it's time to get back to our regularly scheduled banter.
Running a business isn't just about setting up shop and becoming complacent. It's about showing up for ourselves and our clients with a commitment to continuous improvement. We have to be honest with ourselves about where we're at and where we're going. That means identifying strengths and weaknesses so we can improve. After all, if we're remaining stagnant, how can we scale and build the business and life of our dreams? That's where the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz comes in. We're not talking horoscopes and horoscopia. This questionnaire is the perfect starting point for you to begin identifying your strengths, needs, and blind spots as an allied health business owner. The process is simple. Answer the 14 questions and we'll send you a personalized report that includes actionable steps for you to start taking your business to the next level. Ready to take your business into your own hands? Take the NACAR Consulting Allied Health Biz Quiz today.
So the team has had a look at products and suppliers that we now have some preferences for. And I think we've probably still got a bit more work to do on that.
Yeah, we do. Yeah. Because, I mean, it's one of those things that you could spend a year on and still have a comprehensive list because there are so many different facets and there are so many different suppliers and companies popping up every day that are focusing on the sustainable side of things.
You raised a great point. We need to keep that on the agenda for every month.
Yeah.
Because now that our antennas are up, we're looking for products and suppliers that we would have preference over now, over somebody else, some other. And the paper's one example, but sort of energy and event spaces and forms of transport, so on and so forth. All righty. So we've looked at that and we're sort of at the point of messaging out to partners and people that we work with in terms of what we're up to and what they're up to. That's a next step that I think is slated. What can you tell us about carbon offsetting?
So carbon offsetting is the process of compensating for carbon dioxide emissions or other emissions as well through investing in projects aimed at reducing equivalent amount of your emissions made elsewhere. So this is like investing in humanitarian projects in more poorer or remote countries. Who may not have access or may not have easily have access to be able to produce clean energy facilities, such like a wind farm or solar farms and stuff like that. And it can also be other
environment.
Yeah, exactly. Reforestation is another one. it's virtually impossible to get your personal emissions down to zero because fundamentally, as human beings, we emit carbon dioxide.
Yeah, every breath, part of really.
Every breath, yeah. So basically, the aim is to reduce your emissions as much as you possibly can, and then you offset the rest. Mm. And that's how you fundamentally get the net zero. You can either make the decision, as we decided, you can either choose to offset an employee's entire emissions, that's everything they do for an entire year, or just in the scope of doing work hours. Again, that's one of the challenges of it being of us being a remote business is deciding when what is the scope that or what is the extent that we feel is necessary to go to.
Do you think we've got it right, or should we do more?
I'm still in the process of constructing the formal policy.
Yeah.
I'm still humming and hiring on what is the most appropriate. Because I think the thing is, well, you've got to make it feasible enough that it's actually, you know, you can actually achieve the goals that you set. For example, one of the key things that popped into mind was shifting to renewable energy. If you had a physical bricks and mortar office, that would be a lot easier because you could just stick a whole bunch of solar panels up on the roof. And you, because you own, or you either you rent or you own a bricks and mortar place, so you have the solar panels, so you're not really risking that investment. It's a bit different when everyone works in different places. It's, is it financially viable to be able to stick a whole bunch of solar panels on every employee's roof? Like, or is that something that you're just going to have to accept that that is something that is beyond the scope of what we the business can achieve? That's, and that is where the offsetting would come into place.
So there's a piece in there, and we've sort of talked around this. We may not have got to the bottom of it yet, and that's about personal responsibility. So personal responsibility as a human on the planet, and in this case as a contractor or employee with Naker Consulting, and that sits with or within what Naker Consulting will do to offset its carbon footprint as well. So perhaps I'm just thinking now, we probably need to kind of speak to that a little bit more across our team meetings as well.
Just understanding that it's a bit like just working remote in general. Like, it's fundamentally it is our responsibility to work towards becoming carbon neutral as it is to start working or to make sure you do all your work on time working remotely. I truly believe that sustainability should be part of a company's ethos and part of their values, and it should really embody how they move forward in all the steps and what they take with future goals and other objectives. It's a real one of those fundamental underpinnings that sort of drives which direction that you go. And I know in the past with, you know, previous humanitarian the aspects of NACA with B1G1, and I thought, well, what a great opportunity to tie that in with this carbon neutral plan, because it's fundamentally the same idea, but just with a different, I guess, scope in mind.
With the carbon offsetting, I think I said this in the team meeting the other day, I don't for a moment want to buy our way out of personal responsibility. And I think these are conversations we've got ahead of us as a team. Because I guess you could do that, and Ben the cynic is probably well aware of the fact that we can just flip money around the planet and sort of feel as though we've bought ourselves carbon neutrality without what I believe is the necessary ethical and behavioural changes that we should be making alongside of it. So in your interwebbing, have you found a fair few platforms that will process those carbon offsets that you pay to?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of...
There's stacks of them.
There's so many. Yeah. Like, for example, the carbonneutral.com.au has a whole bunch of different projects with various different scopes. So they can range from about $15 to $40 per tonne of carbon dioxide, depending on what project that you want to do. B1G1 also have an employee, what they call the employee offset carbon bundle. The amount that is actually offset varies based on the region that you're located in. They estimate that, and the amount of carbon a person will release is based on the region. So someone in North America might release more carbon dioxide per year than someone in Oceania. So that affects the cost. In Oceania, it's about just a bit over a ton a month is what the average person will emit into the atmosphere. But this includes all activities, not just work hours. So what I did was I calculated, okay, what is our total footprint? And then I divided that by roughly estimated how many of those offset bundles you'd have to purchase to counter the emissions that would be released for the year. Which is one way you can do it. It's not as viable, again, because we only have so many. We only have, you know, we don't have like a million employees working for us or something like that. It's not like on a scale of Woolworths, for example.
No, thank goodness.
It makes a lot easier to do that sort of method to offset your emissions.
The B1G1 was a very pleasant surprise, because where I had some caution was, oh my gosh, we're going to start a partnership with somebody else or with another agency. And we've been supporters of B1G1 for years and years and years now. And it was so cool to see that they had this option ready to go. So from what you know about the B1G1 offsets and the employee offset carbon bundle, you reckon we're going to go with this? We're going to go this way, at least for starters?
I reckon to start off with, it would be the most viable approach to go through. Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of different options. It depends on what a company we decide is the most, or what we feel is right, and what projects that we feel are going to impact. Well, maybe not impact, I guess, the region where the offsetting project is, but just what we feel is right. So it's fundamentally, it's a personal choice, because any offsetting project will fundamentally offset your emissions. But you've got to make sure that it's, something that not only the company as a whole likes, but also something that you definitely would think will make an impact, a long-lasting impact.
But
I reckon to begin with, the B1G1 thing looks
good.
Like a really good cause. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They look great. I took a look the other night. So we've been kind of working very steadily at this really for a couple of months now, in terms of the idea is now hitting the road. What do you think our next steps are?
I think our next steps would be, I think firstly to continue auditing, but on a higher level. Look at what our actual emissions are by trawling through different electricity statements and stuff like that, just so we can actually understand. And I guess would be to, well, for me at least, would be to continue working on this policy and this statement for what our vision is going forward. Because it's nice and all to have the idea that we want to become carbon neutral. And we believe it's important for, personal responsibility on reducing our emissions, but how are we going to do that? What are the targets? What are the benchmarks that we want to achieve? And how are we going to be able to ensure that we know that we've achieved them?
I
think that is the most important step moving forward.
And that will ensure that we don't get complacent around this either. If it's a every week or every fortnight line on our agenda, then we'll be checking in with actions we have maybe taken personal responsibility for, but we'll also need to be accountable to you as project lead on this. And so we'll see a flurry of activity in those minutes before the meeting as we're all reporting up on what we have and haven't quite done. But I think you've got a really interesting role here now within our team to hold us to account to the commitments that we've made to ourselves and to the planet and to the organisation as a whole. So I think there's good fun times ahead for you on this, Ben.
I think the most important thing as well is that it's not easy doing. It's not easy to become more sustainable. It's not easy. Mm. You might think that it's there's a couple of quick fixes, but long-term strategies and things like that, and what you can do on a personal level, is actually quite hard. So I think it's really important, to make sure that you're still easy on yourself, because it's still a learning process for everyone, myself included, on what the best road to take is. And again, even if it's just changing your bin line to one that is compostable, something like that is still making a difference. And that is what's fundamentally the most important.
That's probably exactly where you need to lead us, Ben, is to get a commitment from each of us about something we're going to do between now and the next meeting.
Yeah.
You up for it? Wrangling the sheep?
I'm up. I'm up for it.
Wrangling the cats? You got a pretty responsive crew to work with here. But I think that's keeps us...
Everyone's fantastic.
Yeah, we're a very, very good crew. You're very awesome humans. But I think getting this focus of, right, well, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to stop this, I'm going to not do that for the next month, whatever it is, I think that really, it really gets people thinking about their behaviour and having to report back into the rest of the team about how well they went with it.
And even having a conversation with either someone that you live with or one of your friends on what they are doing to help.
Yeah.
Because the more people that know the significance of what's going to happen if we keep on going how we're going, the better.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There is only so much that we can do individually. That's another issue altogether.
Are we going to take to the streets, Ben? Are we? I've been on.
I mean, I've been there before.
I've been on plenty on climate marches. I'm up for the next one.
Yeah, I've been there before as well. Again, that's a whole other kettle of fish that I think is beyond the scope of what we're talking about today.
Or not. We might have been at the same marches.
We might have been actually. But yeah. I think it's just ensuring that everyone knows we need to change. Otherwise, it's not going to be fun.
Yeah, it's not. I'm going to put you on the spot. What would you like what would you like NACA to have achieved by the end of 2022?
End of 2022.
You've got 6 months.
Is it only 6 months away?
Sorry.
Oh my God. It's July, isn't it? Oh.
It is. All day.
That means I've only got 6 months of uni left.
That is another podcast, Ben. That is another episode. What would you, as carbon neutral project lead, what do you want NACA Consulting to have achieved in the next 6 months? And like, just call it out. Don't hold back.
Like a 15% or 20% change in what supplies or what products that we use that have become sustainable, rather than what we're using at the moment.
Okay,
something as simple as that.
But I think they're the really good goals to have, because then we really know whether we have sent, you know, a quarterly email to our partners about our carbon neutral progress.
Yeah.
Whether we have reduced our personal emissions by 10%.
Yeah, something like that. Or even just, you know, we're making sure that we're only using recycled paper, all our, you know, workbooks, future workbooks and whatnot, they're all also using recycled paper, and other suppliers who are also using renewable energy and whatnot. Again, the most important thing is that it has to be viable. You can't make a really lofty goal and then never realize you can't achieve it because it's not attainable, and then you sit down, shrug your shoulders, go, too hard, and give up. That's the last thing you need to do when it comes to shifting towards carbon neutrality. It's small things make a big difference.
Yeah. Yep. Those daily habits.
Yeah.
Daily habits all have that multiplying effect. I think we're off to a good start.
Oh, we definitely are. And it's only going to keep on going. Now that the momentum shifted, it's just on going forward from here on out.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty. So you can have the talking stick for the last few minutes. I know on Earth Day, I apologized in our Teams chat that my generation haven't done enough. Well, they've created a lot of problems, but nor have they done enough to fix them for, you know, people coming along younger than me. So that stewardship for the planet, I truly believe, is going into better hands in the future. So public apology on that front. We'll get it on the record. What do you want to say on climate change?
I mean, fundamentally, it's real. It's not a myth. It's something that everyone should be concerned about. It should be at the forefront of everyone's minds that this is something that we as a species need to tackle. It's not political. It doesn't care on how you feel. It is, simply put, it is a thing that has been put into the atmosphere, and the more of it traps more heat. That ain't good.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when, like, you sit there and you go to uni and you look at the models and you do the work yourself and you can see firsthand that a really small permutation in the amount of carbon dioxide and other elements in the atmosphere makes a huge difference on such a large scale. I feel it's just getting the message out there that it's. I feel oddly optimistic at the moment with how seemingly the world is starting to take it a little bit more seriously. That the world is starting to realize that we actually do need to work on this.
Yeah.
Again, I'm trying to. I try to restrain myself from pure optimism because it's something that you still see plenty of things on the news or whatnot that you feel a bit deflated. Especially, my heart goes out to all the people who've experienced loss in the floods in New South Wales this year.
Yep.
Especially the ones that have just happened in the last week.
Like again,
the fourth time in the year, and it's exactly. It's like how many, it's like a once in a 100-year flood. It's like
how many once in a 500-year floods can you have?
Exactly, it's like a once in a 100-year flood should not be a once a month flood. Yeah. It shouldn't be happening like that at all. And that should be a wake-up call that it's here. It's not like it's 10, 20 years down the track and it just, wake up one morning and you could go outside and the sky's on fire. No, it's the effects of climate change are here now and they're only going to get more and more dramatic and more and more intense if we don't change our ways. And I think that's the fundamental message that if I die tomorrow, I will be happy knowing that I've tried my best, and I hope
we just got to make sure that doesn't happen tomorrow, and that you're still trying. Many years time.
Obviously, I would like to wake up tomorrow. I've got a good day tomorrow, but it's just it's happening. We need to change our ways, and I'm excited. I'm nervous if we don't.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for what the future for what the future has in store because. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
There could be a huge breakthrough. There could not be. We don't know unless we keep trying and we keep fighting.
And the option of wait and see or wait for somebody else to take action is not an option.
Yeah. It's not a long book. No, never was. Never is. And that was honestly one of the reasons why I decided, because I was still during my degree, I hummed and hawed whether I wanted to be doing atmospheric science or wanted to do something else. But then it sort of clicked on me that no, this is too important and to push away. This is something that is deep and belongs, deep in my heart. And I got to be able to do as much as I can personally to make a difference.
Yeah.
That for me is, what keeps me going.
Beautiful. Love that. Love that. We are so lucky to have you and that passion in our team. Couldn't think of a better person to lead this project. And, fair to say we've still got our L plates on, maybe our red peas. And we've got a lot of work to do individually and collectively as the NACA consulting team. But I think it's a great project for you to be leading with us. And for us as a little organisation to create the ripples. Get other people thinking about it. So thank you so much for jumping into the podcast. I know you've never done anything like this before, but
never done it before in my life. Or maybe I was on a radio call like once when I was 10. That's about the closest
or something.
I think I got told off because I was talking too much. So, that's probably not a good start. But
perfect. That's exactly what you want. So I think there's an opportunity here for us to be accountable to those that are listening to the podcast as well and to bring some updates from time to time as well, particularly some updates in 6 months' time when we're deeper into it and our commitment is even more wholehearted than it is now. I think it'd be really cool to be able to report back in on what we've achieved.
Yep, 100%.
Yeah. All righty. Thanks, Ben.
Thank you.
See you around.
Sure will.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. For the show notes and other resources, our webinar replays, they're all available over on naca.com.au. And if you're loving what you're listening to, please subscribe. We don't want you to miss out on a single thing. And if you want others to get the same benefit that you've had from listening into these episodes, please share this episode and any of the others forward to any of your other allied health business colleagues. And we are totally here for you. Don't forget for a moment that you can jump on in and book that power call, and we can see how we can help you get the best of business done. Looking forward to seeing you there.